Okay, we warmly welcome Miriam as our speaker for tonight. Tonight is July 28th, 2026. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on OA Footsteps as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please only use your first name or an alias. The opinions expressed here are those of the individuals. Welcome, Miriam.
Can you hear me now? Hi, I'm Miriam, compulsive overeater. It's an honor to be here. I still sometimes, well, maybe not so much, but once in a while I'll struggle being on Zooms just because when I got abstinent, I got abstinent where the meetings were in person, and I was very lucky to attend the meetings that I did in person, but my abstinent date is November 1st, 1998. But I always say this, and this is just my story. I came in 6 years before that. And I always say this too. It's like if there's anything I could stress, it's just don't leave, And my recovery was not like, I landed here and then I got abstinent and it was linear from that point on. It hasn't been that way. But I will say the one thing I did was I never left. Thank God I never left. And my process of recovery has been kind of like definitely been abstinent from November 1st. And when that happened, it all changed. But those first 6 years, I really did a half measure thing. So what was it like? I'll give you an idea of what it was like when and I don't know if it's my personality, my person, or my environment. It could have been both. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that I'm powerless over food. I'm a compulsive overeater, and there's an answer, there's a solution, and it's this program. But I will say that, and I use these as stories because this just gives you an idea. I always can talk for hours about once you get me started. But when I was three, I was at the mall where I used to live with my mom, and I saw a See's candy store upstairs, and I ditched her. By the way, I didn't bring this up, but there was another store there, and there was a lady, and she was beautiful. She was tall and beautiful. And my mom, and I was like three, and I was shopping for a little dress with my mom, and my mom's talking to this lady, and my mom was comparing me to the lady, like saying, "Well, Miriam's waist is a little bit like this, and her waist was like this, and she's tall, and she's a woman, grown woman." She's comparing me to the 3-year-old little girl that I am. I remember it. All this, it hit me. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh yeah, that too. Anyway, and then I went to the See's candy store, and I stole a bucket of See's candy, and I brought it downstairs to my mom, and my mom's got these security guards around her looking for her daughter, and I'm like, look what I got. Yahoo! And I'm stealing candy. And I was very attracted to candy at 3 years old. So that's that. And then I was put on a diet at nine because I was diagnosed with a health condition at nine, where they told me that if I, my uncle was my pediatrician. And it's interesting how stories change over time because I hated my uncle, I hated my dad, I hated my mom, and I don't. I have a whole different take on it now that I've worked the steps over it. But even again and again and again, as I continue to do this, things change as you continue to recover in this program. But at the time, my uncle was my doctor, and what he said was kind of like God, And I think about it too. My parents at the time, I was nine, and they were broke. My dad was struggling. My mom didn't work. She was a stay-at-home mom. And my uncle, he was my doctor for free. Like, he didn't charge a dime the whole time. And I'm like, wow. And you just look back and you think, God really does work in my life and has worked in my life if we keep going towards it. I was told I could never eat sugar again. And the thing is, I think maybe normal people would be like, okay, I'm diabetic. I have to be on this food plan. It's genetic in my family. It's not because I was heavy. I wasn't heavy when I was diagnosed. It's in my, on my dad's side of the family. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, but all of a sudden everyone's watching what I'm doing and everyone's talking about my weight and everyone's talking about how I can't gain weight and how my diet needs to be regulated. And I'm going to nutritionists. I'm going to, I'm getting educated on what to eat. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I will say this too. And I always, we have our moments where it's like, God damn. When I was 11, so I'm being watched like a hawk from 9 to 11, and my mom really did the best she could do. But when I came into program, I hated her. She was the reason why I was in OA. It is not like that now that I've worked the steps and looked at my part big time. So at 11, I'm going to middle school. I'm the first group of sixth graders to go to middle school. No one's watching what I'm eating anymore. And also, when I was on the swim team, I was on the swim team because my mom tried to regulate my weight. It wasn't because I liked it. I hated it. I hated it. And I knew that if I had low blood sugars, I could eat sugar. So, or eat something sweet. It usually was supposed to be like a banana or an apple or orange juice. Well, at the YMCA on swim team, nobody's looking, so I fake having low blood sugar so I can get out of swim, number one, because I hated it. And so I could go to the locker room and have a bag of those cookies. And just nobody's looking, I get to have cookie, so I had the cookies and I remember it just like the alcoholic. Maybe their environment was hard to be in, maybe they didn't feel like they fit in. Maybe it's just hard to exist, right? And that was me. All the above. I was the black sheep in the family. I felt like it. And when I had those cookies, I had such a feeling of like relief, like, oh. Like for the first time, I felt good, And you hear that with the alcoholics, they have their first drink, the heroin addicts. It's pretty intense for me to do. I was scared of that, but the feeling you get when you have that first, like, this is it. Like, and maybe, some have called it a spiritual experience. Like, you finally feel like you can exist and everything's okay, And I really believed I chased that. I chased that. And, I was a kid. I didn't know any better, but in that year, and I'm the kind of person that's like, don't tell me what to do. I'm still like that, by the way. It's an ongoing joke, but I'm better. But at the time, people were telling me what to eat. And at the time, people are telling me that I have to do this and that and the other thing, my parents and my family, and that if I if and here's the thing, like when I started eating that year in sixth grade, no one's looking all of a sudden. No one's trying to control Miriam, and I can do what I want. So what did I do? I gained about 65 pounds that year by eating Kit Kats and the big chocolate chip cookies and the brownies. Now, mind you, I'm not just eating, I'm killing myself with food. And they told me after about a year of that, I see a picture of myself, and all of a sudden I'm a fat kid. And everyone's kind of like, what is Miriam doing? And I was gaining weight. I wasn't fitting in my clothes anymore. And I'm a kid. I don't know anything. All of a sudden, I see this picture of myself in seventh grade, and I'm a fat girl. And all of a sudden, that began the diets of I gotta lose weight. And everyone would say, Miriam, you gotta lose weight. And my diabetic doctor, Dr. Bachrach, who was friends with my uncle, he would say she's got to lose weight. She's morbidly obese for her height. I was 5 feet 1. I'm 5 feet 1 still, and maybe 5 feet and a half. I don't know, but anyway, and that began the chase of the diets and the hell on earth, and until I'm thin, and I have to get thin, and one diet after another, paid diets, back to nutritionists, hospitalized again. I'll give you an example of how it progressed because I can only talk for so long, but I really was an overachiever too. I really thought the more I showed you that I was trying hard and proving myself, that the more I could show you I'm worth something. And in my mind, I developed these ideas while eating. The more I ate, the more crazy I became. And some of these ideas I developed, I really chased. And the more I chased these fantasies and these ideas, the more I set myself up to separate myself from you. I hated everybody. I was jealous of all the girls who didn't have this problem. I didn't understand why other people didn't have this problem. All I wanted was to be like everybody else and to be normal and pretty like all the other regular girls that I saw out there. And I was not that. And until I'm that, nothing matters. And so I'm giving up hope because every time I did a diet, I couldn't stick to it. I'd gain weight after it was done, thank God. And I really blamed myself for it. And the thing about this disease, alcoholism, I don't know about the alcoholic, but I do know for me, I blamed myself. I thought, I am wrong. What's wrong with me? So I'm 16 and a half, and this is just an example of what a day was becoming like every day. So, I'm going to school. I'm getting B's and A's because I can do grades, no problem. I know how to just follow direction. I know how to get good grades. But not even the best grades, just whatever to get by. And I never comprehended books, by the way, because I was so messed up in my head from high blood sugars. But I was working, and I'm in a vocal ensemble, and I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm real fun around people, by the way. Funny, fun. But miserable. I can put on a good act. And I get home at 4:30. I was going to Taft High School. I get home at 4:30, and my parents started hiding the chocolate from me and hiding food from me because I'd always get it, and that was what was killing me was the food. So I got real angry when I saw them hide it, and what came up was, "What's wrong with me? I hate you." The shame, the pity. They always looked at me with pity, like oh, just that look, just like the alcoholic, like what's wrong with you? And then they left. They went out to dinner or something, or they went somewhere. And I had to work at 6 in Studio City at this restaurant and as a hostess. And I'd worked there till like 11. So what happened was I had one piece of chocolate. They hid it, and I was like, I'm going to find that chocolate. I'll just have one. And I had one, and we all know what happens. I had two, and then three, and then all the way up to like 13, 14, maybe. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? And they're going to find out. And I did it again. What's wrong with me? That phenomenon of craving that the big book talks about, that was it. And what happened was I was really losing faith in life by this time because things were not working for me. And I gave myself, like, I live off of insulin, and it's like 20 units for a 24-hour span. Well, I shot myself that moment with 50 units of insulin, 50 units of insulin, because I had just binged on chocolate. Because I'm thinking, I got to bring it down now because I got to go to work, right? I'm 16 and a half. And what happened was I kind of came out of a blackout and I went, oh my God, what have I done? I just gave myself way too much. I'm becoming really sick, and I had to have a big glass of orange juice on top of it to make my blood sugars go back up with two pieces of bread. So my blood sugars didn't plummet because I could have gone into a diabetic coma. And then I went over to the restaurant, and I'm charming, I'm funny, I'm meeting funny people. I can socialize and have a good get. Talk is cheap, I've heard. But I'd go to the restaurant, and then I wouldn't have dinner, of course, because I just binged. Then I'd come home and I'd say, I'm not going to eat tonight. I do homework. I'd say, I'm not going to eat. I go to bed at like, 1 in the morning. Then I'd wake up 2 hours later and binge through the night. And then I'd wake up in the morning, go to school, and go, oh, I did it again. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And mind you, normal blood sugars for me now are like 70 to 120, 125, 130, maybe. But back then, they were in the 400s all the time. That leads to blindness. That leads to body parts being amputated. Anyway, so by that point, and prior to that, I remember saying to myself, I'll stop before it's too late. I'll stop before it's too late. I'll clean this up before it's too late. And what happened was I had crossed that line, and that was at 16 and a half. And my mom tried to get me to go to OA. She tried to 12 step me when I was 16 and a half, and I wasn't willing. 17, I went to the Darby office and I said, I don't know what this is, I'm leaving. And then my mother caught me binging one more time in the middle of the night. That's not true. It was 11:30 at night and I was on diet center. Now, mind you, I'm just thinking a diet will fix me, but over time I stopped thinking the diets were going to fix me. And I really was losing hope on everything. I could do this. I cry because whenever I speak, I cry. And I need to speak because my life is so not what that was. But she caught me binging at 11:30 at night and she said, why don't you go to OA? And I was at doing diet center, and this was like my third month in the diet center. And that was another thing too. I'd always try to prove to you I was trying to lose weight, but I never lost weight. And I wanted to more than anything. That's the thing. I wanted to. I just couldn't. And she said, why don't you go to OA? And I did. And that was the beginning of my life. And when I came to that Darby office, I tell you what, it was kind of in a scuzzy area. That didn't matter to me. It could have been Skid Row. I didn't care. I just knew that when I walked in, there was something here. And I couldn't tell you what it was. But I felt such relief, like it all stops here, All that chasing, trying stops here. So what happened was I hung out for 6 years and I have 3 minutes left and finally hit bottom. I got a sponsor, and I met business. And I'm trying to like be more present with what's going on these days, but I really hit bottom and I put down all the foods and I realized that I'm sick and I'm not working the steps and I was still maintaining like 170. I'm now like 135, 133, 132. I'd like to be, but I really was like, I'll do anything to get out of this hell of Miriam. And that was 6 years later. I had never worked step four, and I knew that if I worked step four, I would experience that psychic change that the big book talks about. That if I live in that psychic change, I won't have to go back to the foods that will kill me because I'll be addressing the character defects that I have that always brought me back to the food. So if I work a step four, maybe I have a chance of changing because I don't want to be me anymore. And I knew that if I changed with this program, that I wouldn't have to be fat. I knew that if I put the food down, that means abstaining from those foods that will kill me, which was most foods for me, because I'm a drug addict with food. I'm not going to have the light version of heroin in my house if I'm a heroin addict. I need to be away from it because I'll lose. I'll lose. So I put the food down. I got lots of commitments and I made this my life. And that was because I had truly hit a bottom in 1998. August, I was very down and out in 1998. September, I was down and out. October, I was down and out. And then finally, someone looked at me and said she'd be my sponsor. And that was at Monday Night Miracles in Encino, California. And November 1st is my abstinent date. And that's when I've made this everything. And I still do. To speed it up, God has really done things that I could never do on my own. That's for sure. I was on my way to death. I knew in my heart that 5 more years of the way I was living, and I'd be dying a slow, miserable death, and my quality of life would be nothing. I knew it. But I knew that if I finally lived by this program, putting those foods down, getting a sponsor, surrendering myself by being willing to take action from a sponsor and doing the things she said, I stood a chance of surviving. I stood a chance of having a good life, maybe. And I believed in this program with all my heart, and I still do. I've tried very hard these last few years to really address my ego. I learned in this program that from AA Comes of Age that Dr. Thibaut talks about the ego having marvelous recuperative powers, and that years of abstinence or years of sobriety are no insurance against that recuperative ego. And I really have struggled with that these last 5 years. When I moved from LA to Austin, I realized I had this kind of Miss OA identity because I had made it my life, and this program has given me beyond anything I could have wished for, believe me. But when I moved and people in Austin were like, "You're who?" Is that it? I've really had to look at my ego and get humble and trust God in a whole new way. It's not the fellowship as much. It's more God. And when I go to God, things get good and I'm not in the food and I'm like amazed. So, I don't know if I said anything worthwhile. Take what you want, leave the rest. I'm one amongst many. And is that my time or do I have more time? I don't even know. Do I have more time?
That's your time, but we're going to do 15 minutes of questions.
Oh, okay.
So
So,
trust me, you'll get more time.
huh. Well, it's an honor to be here and thanks for letting me share.
All right. Thank you, Miriam, for great. Okay, now's the time, and it will be recorded for our speaker to ask our speaker questions. Please put them, you can message them to me or put them in. We're going to open the chat so everybody can chat. You're welcome to message them to me or the group. We ask that you do not come off mute because it's being recorded. We will allow 15 minutes for questions, after which time we will have open sharing. Okay, the first question is, how do you work your program today on a daily basis?
Okay, so I get up at 5:15. I hit my knees and I say thank you, God, for this day and my abstinence. Then I get my coffee. Then I get my journal and my OA White for Today book. I get my Black 24 Hours a Day AA book. And now I have another meditation that a friend of mine just sent me that I'm reading. Sometimes I'll read from the big book, 86 through 88, depending if I feel like I need it more. I write down my food. I write down in my journal the date. I write down, "Dear God, thank you for this day. What would you have me do for today?" And then I have him write back to me what I would do that day. Then I take a sponsee call one time. Then I take another sponsee call. Then I meditate for right now. It's 6 minutes. It's all I can do. I can't do any more. It started out with two. Now it's six. And that's good for me. Six minutes for the whole day. That's the beginning. And I take OA calls. I'm off work right now, so then I'll go walking, running. And then I'm calling people all day long, or they call me. I stop and I write to God when I'm not focused. "Dear God, what would you like me to do? Please guide me." I go to lots of meetings. I like meetings, thank God. And part of it too is I hear people who relapse, they stop going to meetings. And I know a guy here in Austin in AA. I just love every time he shares. I really respect his program. And he's got like 40 something years. Great story too. And he says, "Well, I wouldn't stop going to meetings. Why would you stop going to meetings?" And when he said that to me, I went, "Yeah, why would I stop going to meetings?" So I just keep going to meetings. And I do that. What else do? I have commitments. I used to have a lot more commitments. Right now, I have three commitments. They come lightly for me. I have an in-person Saturday meeting that I go to here in Austin. I hit other meetings on Zoom. And at night, I get on my knees and I say, "Thank you, God, for this day." Now, I don't do 10 steps like people do the nightly reviews. I don't do that. But I do a step 10 emotional check. Like, if I'm wound up about something and it won't go away, then I'll do an inventory on it. Or if I have a resentment, which by the way, resentments come up all the time. It can come up in an OA meeting I'll write about it. So I write about, I do inventory, a lot of it. The sponsor I have now, who's wonderful, she has me doing a lot of inventory. And usually the one thing I think it's this, but after doing my inventory, it's this, which basically comes to more God. And, but over here, I'm concerned. I think I'm for sure it's about this, but it's not. It's so much deeper. And so I'm never done. The steps can really, how deep do I want to go with the steps? You can go real deep with the steps. And I sponsor, right now I'm sponsoring, I think, enough people. I don't know, but I'm human too, so I get wound up. I get resentful. Sometimes I want to say F this. But I talk to people about it. I'm on the phone a lot. So that's what I do. And
Thank
I look for
you.
God. I look for God too a lot. So that's, yeah, sorry.
Okay, no, it's fine. What advice would you give someone who is in relapse?
Keep coming back, don't leave. That's all I would say. Just keep
Okay.
coming back, don't leave.
Okay, do you still do all the OA steps, and what do you still struggle with?
I do the steps that's kind of like, 1, 2, and 3 come immediately, like I'm powerless over food. I need God, and God, you take it. That's kind of immediate. I'm always doing 10, 11. I think I'm kind of doing a lot of them all through the day, but, the first sponsor I had, she really worked me in a vigilant way. But then she was less available, so I'd have to go to other people to start over with the steps with new people. And that's what I've done. I'm sorry, what was the other part of the question, Rich? The steps part, and then what was the next
It
part?
was, do you still the steps, and what do you struggle with?
Oh yeah. I struggle with myself. I'm always struggling with myself, I get resentful. I think things should be different. That was a big struggle I had moving here was for about 3 years, I really felt disconnected to God because I relied on the fellowship where I used to live, and then I could no longer rely on that. I could no longer rely on certain people I'd relied on, and I felt very lost being out here. I felt like an umbilical cord had been cut from me, and how unhealthfully codependent I was on some people in OA, and it really devastated me, and I could not forgive, and it wouldn't go away. I must have done 70 inventories over, not 70, maybe 50 on 2 people in the program, and resentment, but I knew in my heart that I couldn't hang on to it, and I just kept writing about it over and over and over again until it got less and less and less, and it finally went away. It takes patience and it takes faith to believe in this higher power that's going to help you and not eat over it. That's what the guiding principle, I'm not going to eat over it, and I have to work the steps. So I struggle with resentment. I struggle with people not, people doing things people, I think relationships are an area that I still struggle with sometimes, but it's gotten much better. And not thinking I'm hot stuff, I thought I was hot stuff in OA. I didn't realize that until I left. So, had to get real humble with that.
What is, okay, this part I'm not sure if you want to answer, but what is your eating plan, and what is your favorite tool?
My eating plan evolved over time, but it started in the beginning with writing down my food and committing it and being honest. That was the beginning of me turning my thinking about food over because it was the impulsiveness, the spontaneity around food. Like, oh, I think I'll have this and I think I'll have that on my own without being accountable to anybody. So I had to be willing to turn that over and be honest with somebody in the beginning. That was it. It was about being honest and abstaining from sugar and alcohol. And then over maybe about 3 months, starting to get on a food plan that got me to start to lose the weight. And I really believe in my heart that like you are what you eat. So like if I want to be a normal weight, I'm not going to be eating a Big Mac for lunch. I'm not even gonna have bread, to be honest with you. So I really had to have, I could only eat those foods that felt safe. So I mostly have, I do have, just in the morning I have oatmeal. It's measured, half cup plain grains. But then mostly just proteins, vegetables, and fruits. I don't have any carbohydrates other than oatmeal in the morning. It's safe for me, it feels good, and I kind of look at it as like you are what you eat. So if I'm going to have vegetables and proteins, and it comes from the earth, then it's safe. But if it's processed or refined, it's not safe for me. But that wasn't immediate. My sponsor at the time said, give yourself a year with me to work through the steps. I'm going to be your step and food sponsor. And it evolved over time, but I had to abstain from sugar and alcohol in the beginning, and mostly bread too. Bread wasn't good for me, but that wasn't that way in the very beginning. It was about being honest with someone, and that changed over time. It evolved. So,
Okay, how do you know when you're spiritually fit or not?
it's hard because I laugh at myself, like I like to joke. I think it's important to laugh, right? But sometimes that can be mean too. Like sometimes I can be like, psh, I can get like that. When I'm in self-will and I want something my way, I'm in self-will and it's disease thinking. It's not spiritual. And when I'm doing something to distract me, it's not spiritual. I'm not perfect at that. When I stop and I ask God, what do you want me to do? I'm scared. Help me. Help me walk through this. And I'm going to trust you. Then I know I'm spiritually fit. And I know I'm spiritually fit if I do the discipline every day, but I have my stuff, I can get angry. I can get envious. I compare still. That's a big one for me, comparing. Not so much, but still there. Yeah. So, and I'm constantly going to God all day long. I mean, in my classroom, I have a chair that says, please don't sit here. And it's all lit up. It's like at the horseshoe table for the kids. Nobody's allowed to sit there. They think I sit there, but really it's my higher power that sits there. So that's something I do too. That's all I got.
Cool. How did step nine go for you, and what did you do if and when you stalled?
I didn't have any major detrimental, horrible amends to make. I just did them. I was like, I'll do anything to keep this. And I didn't have to like do anything terrible, like, stealing someone's husband or anything, or stealing from a bank. But I had amends to make and I just did it. I mean, I remember I used to steal at this Ralph's on like White Oak and Ventura. And I had to go to the manager and make amends and say, I used to steal, I used to take the dates and I used to eat them and here's my money for it. And he was like, oh, psh, so it was a no big deal. But my thinking about any of this is you do what you got to do to keep this. And if you're desperate enough, you'll do anything to keep it. It doesn't matter what you have to do. It's like, would you rather be afraid and sit in the fear or just face it with God and not eat? That's it. So yeah. I mean, I did other things too, but I don't want to talk about what there were some amends I had to make and
Okay,
I did
to
it.
stay with your plan, do you avoid eating out or eating with others then, or not in a way?
Yeah, my first year, so eat with OA people. Sure. My first year, nothing else mattered but me getting better. So I didn't do if any person, place, or thing was a threat to my abstinence, my serenity, my sobriety, it had to go. So and I'll be honest, the only thing I would watch on TV was I Love Lucy. Nothing else. And you think I'm joking, but I mean it with all my heart. I didn't watch anything else but I Love Lucy because I was so sensitive to losing this thing and I didn't trust myself. So I didn't eat out much with people at all that first year. And if I ever did go out with anyone, it was like a big, like, this is what I'm doing before and accounting for it. And being very careful with what I'm having at the restaurant. Sometimes I'd go to the restaurant and not have anything because I just wasn't comfortable. And then I'd go home and eat, or I'd eat before. What comes first is my abstinence, number one. And I eat out, but there's always, the salad with the protein or the omelet with the egg whites and the vegetables. Like I always go to where I can have it. Now I have steak sometimes, but this is 27 plus years later. It wasn't like this the first 5 years, 10 years. It really took learning. And one thing I will say too is don't judge the process, your process. Even if you feel like you're struggling, just keep coming back. It all counts. I really believe that, So, yeah.
Okay, we got one. I'm trying to shorten it because it's really long in the chat. Okay, I'm an OA member from China. I'm like, what does moderation in diet mean in OA, and how do you interpret it? Does it simply mean maintaining a healthy weight? Also, how does OA define anorexia and bulimia?
I can only speak from like a spiritual standpoint on this, that I'm self-will, self. I go by the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's mine's covered up. But if I'm in self-will and I'm trying to control and moderate my food, see, I can't moderate. I can't eat intuitively. I can't. Some people can, but I can't. And if I could do that, then I wouldn't need to be in OA. I'm an addict, and I'm an addict with food. So that means I can't have certain foods. If I have certain foods, game on. I want more. I don't want to feel that obsession. So if I put those foods down, I'm not going to be in the obsession. It's really freedom from that. And then working the steps. I really believe that this higher power, God, wants me to be happy, joyous, and free, so he's not going to make me fat. If I am going to do God's will by surrendering myself to a food plan and a sponsor, then I will not be fat. But if I could eat in moderation or intuitively, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. That's just my experience. I don't know how to do that and be abstinent. I'd go off and I'd want more. And I suffer from more. If it tastes good, I want more. If it feels good, I want more. And that's my problem. So when I am eating those foods that are sane for me, I don't want more. And I feel safe and I feel free from the obsession. So, and I'm not fat at all. I look pretty good. I think this is what God's made me be, It's because of God. It's not because of me. I'm healthy. I'm 53 with type 1 diabetes. I'm healthy from God. It's not from me. I was
Okay.
willing.
Okay, the last question. What did you do to, okay, what did you do to stay off sugar?
Cry. No. I cried a lot. My first year, I cried a lot. I cried a lot. And I was uncomfortable, and I went, and I'll be honest with you. You want to know the truth? Well, why would I lie? I went to 2 to 3 meetings a day in person because I was so uncomfortable. Those first 30 days, I felt like I was going to die. And so I'd go to late night AA meetings. I'd go to OA meetings during the day. I'd go to AA meetings during the day. I lived in meetings because it was the only place I felt safe, and I could not have the sugar. I couldn't do it. I'm not going to do it. So it's like replacing the sugar with meetings. That is the truth. I did like 20 meetings, not 20, maybe 14, 15 meetings a week. I had to in order to not hurt myself with food. It's not like I can think my way out of this. If I could, I wouldn't need it. And they were all in person. So now there's all these Zooms. Now I'll be honest with you. This Zoom, I feel more connected because I know some of the people, but other Zooms, I don't connect. I need to connect with addicts. I need to connect with compulsive overeaters. I need to connect with crazy people who are just brand new sober because I feel crazy getting off the sugar. So I need to see how are they? They look crazy. They look crazier than I feel right now. I guess I'm not so bad. I would be like that in meetings because that's what made me feel good. It's like, oh, okay, I'll be all right tonight. today and then the next day, just for today, just for this hour, help me. I also started to believe in a higher power that was my own. And I would believe this higher, but I also had about 30 people behind me in my fellowship that really, I knew that I was gonna, I relied on them very heavily too. So, but I was nuts. I was crying, screaming, fuck that. You gotta abstain. Make noise. Screw it. To keep, you can't save your face and save your ass at the same time. I'm swearing. I hope, sorry. Oh, well, sorry. Okay, there. Don't care. Screw it. Anyway, yeah. Anything else? Sorry.
No, okay, that is the end of our question period. That was awesome. Okay.